Shalom, everyone. It's so good to see everybody's wonderful faces. And yes, I use the word face on purpose. But the Father is so good to us and He cares so greatly for us. I've been very, very thankful for the words that I've gone forth. And time again, whether it's a word of encouragement or we're being exhorted, it's all out of love. Because the Father genuinely cares about each and every one of us. And He cares about how we're managing. That's been really on the radar, especially for me. I know me and the wife were speaking about it prior, that we were literally discussing, because we were talking about how fast everything gets, especially when springtime comes rolling around, summertime gets hot, things start to speed up. You can get real busy real quick. But that's no excuse for us not to manage our time properly. If anything, we should be motivated to find ways to make sure that we're continually managing our time. Because no matter how busy we get, we've said it all the time, when the Father's presence is with us, it doesn't matter what's going on. We're in a good spot. We're in a good place whenever we feel His presence with us. Of course, all these words are going to tie in. But the Father is so good to us. And I'm more than thankful when the manager shows up when you need them. But I'll get to that in a minute, because I had a little adventure at Sam's Club on Wednesday. That's where Brother Rob was at. 2-hour wait time turned into 4 hours. But you got to remain with a good panim, good face for people. So let's get started with the reading of our main text. We are in the wonderful area of Genesis 43. And we'll start from 1, but we're going to be looking at verse 3 again, because there's some more there. I know we might not be Samoans, but we definitely love a Samoa. I'm going to stop. It's good to be back, and I love the AC. So let's see. All right, let's start with verse 1. But the scarcity of food was severe in the land. And it came to be, when they had eaten of the grain which they had brought from Mishraim, that their father said to them, "Go back, buy us a little food." But Yehuda spoke to them, saying, "The man vehemently warned us, Ud, saying, 'You do not see my face, Panayim, unless your brother is with you.'" Now let's go ahead and crack open that word, Panayim. There's a lot that we can get from there. And it's going to seem like a lot that's presented tonight is probably more review. Because whenever you look at Panayim, you see that there's 2,120 mentions because of its multiple uses that we can see in Scripture, the way that it's used. And the natural man, whenever he sees that number, thinks, yeah, we'll just speed read through 2,120 references. Well, I'm not a speed reading athlete, but thankfully, whenever you go before the Father in prayer, He'll lead and guide you and make things a lot more simple, and you don't have to worry about trying to tackle a freight liner. But panim, face, there's something that's being required here. We see that Ud was there, and we were exhorted by Brother Sky about said, Amar, how important it is to listen whenever someone's speaking. And then right after that, we're seeing the Ud. And then also keep in mind, we're being charged and reminded of how important it is for us to manage properly. Well, thankfully, we see here that Yehuda is raising up to the occasion and he's managing the situation properly. Because we're going to have occasions rise up. We live in a world that's constantly going out of control. I know you spend a little bit of time on the news media outlets, you could definitely see certain things taking place, especially right now. That's why it's very important to make sure that we remain in a position to where we receive the Ud, the warnings, and listen to that voice. But it said, "You do not see my face unless your brother is with you." And whenever we look at that word, I'm going to go into the details of it, but one of the most important things, as we probably already know, face can also mean presence. Because you've got the literal and then the figurative. As it says right here in Strong's H6440. Panim, of an unused root from panech, from 6437, the face, as the part that turns, and used a great variety of applications, literally and figuratively. Now, of course, we know these things that we're familiar with. Because instantly, whenever I was thinking about it, okay, well, we know what a face is literally. We all have one. When I was looking at my driver's license card, just to reflect on my ID, I was like, that's a nice face. Look at that. That's not bad. But the presence, we've all experienced it, right? Whether growing up or speaking to your own children. It could be something as simple as, I don't want to see your face until you clean that room. Of course, if you take that literally, then that means you go into your room and then they're going to go into the house and turn over every picture frame on the wall and turn this one down, this and that. But ultimately, we know it's in the figurative sense, just like in the sense of the fact that Yosef said, you will not be in my presence unless you do this. And that is a huge stance on the fact that we cannot approach the Father any kind of way which we please. There are stipulations, there are requirements. The thing is, he loves us so much, he wants us in his presence. He wants us to be with him. But there's things that's required of us. Let's keep moving through this. We're looking at face in the Father's book. Instead of Facebook, I couldn't help it. So ancient Hebrew lexicon is the H6440 and it's 1382-HN. Its parent root is pay and noon. What it means to turn face, the turning of the face. And that HN is the pay, the noon, and the hay. And it says, face. The face, also the presence of one through the sense of being in the face of. And then it goes into some technicalities that shows how it's used in different ways. But I wanted to point something out that I found that was interesting. This is something that y'all may already know through your studies. But dealing with face and using the tool that we were given, you can add up some gematria. And I thought this was pretty interesting. But pay, because we're looking at panayim, not just panach, but panayim, the plural. Pay is 80. Nun is 50. Yod is 10. And mem is 40. So you get 180. Now, of course, when you think about it, because it's talking about to turn face. And then we're also speaking about how important it is to heed to the warnings, to listen to the voice that said, to make sure that we're managing our lives properly, to make sure that we're putting the work in, because there's a work that's required of us to maintain that salvation. But quite literally, there's times in our life where we need to realize that there's things that grab our attention, and we need to take that 180 and turn into the direction of the Father, so that way we can actually be within his presence. So an area of an example, and this is going to be review, is in Exodus 33, 1 through 23. So it's praying to the Father. I wanted to keep it as in line and up to par where we've been looking at and where we've been currently digging into. Because we're given these incredible examples of what takes place whenever we actually allow ourselves to face him the way that he so sees fit for us and the benefits that come from that. But I believe time and time again, a lot of the time, the number one thing that gets us in trouble, that brings shame upon our face, is complaining. It's so easy to complain. It's so easy to start looking at the next person. It's so easy to ignore the warnings. Instead, be the one giving the warnings only, instead of heeding to the warnings. And I think time and time again, when we get ourselves in that position, we're not showing good face. But verse 1 says, "And Yehovah said to Moshe, come up from here, you and the people whom you have brought out of the land of Mishrim to the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Yitzhak, to Jacob, saying, to your seed I give it. And I shall send my messenger before you, and I shall drive out the Canaanite and the Amorite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Hittite and the Jebusite to a land flowing with milk and honey. For I do not go up in your midst because you are a stiff-necked people, lest I consume you on the way." Let's hold our place there. We're going to come back to that, because being reminded about complaining reminded me of a scripture that I don't have in my notes. Well, let's go to Numbers chapter 11. I'm not sure completely how this may fit. Maybe it might just be for me, because maybe I have the mother grubs a little too much sometimes. But I definitely had a victory this week that I'm going to share with y'all in a second. I'm going to share it right now. The reality is showing face. Our faces can tell a lot. Our faces can tell if we're disinterested. Our faces can tell if we have attitude. Our faces can tell that if we're happy. It's all interesting how the Father designed us in a way to literally use this as either a green light or a stoplight. I'll put it that way. Because if I'm being annoying to the wife, usually she can make a face that, you know, would say, "Hey, stop while you're ahead, buddy. Or you want a ticket, run the red light." But we have these simple yet profound examples that the Father has literally built into us to really show if we're reflecting His character in certain moments, right? That's what I'm getting at. So, Wednesday, making sure I had the right countenance, making sure I had the right spirit, because I definitely was being tested. My wife had a nail in her tire on the sidewall on the inside. We didn't know until later on, but it kept continuously leaking, continuously presenting a problem. The warning sign was on the dash, the low tire pressure sign. It kept popping up. I put 40 pounds of pressure in that bad boy the day prior. The next day comes along, 23 PSI. That don't sound good. So that being said, I call Sam's, I'm like, "How are we gonna do this? We can get you if you can get in here as soon as possible." I was like, "Sounds good. Get off of work early, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Start making my way up there, swap vehicles, get to Sam's." Like, this is gonna be clockwork. Everything's going smoothly. I'm gonna get back down here in time. We're gonna be able to fellowship and Bible study. Because I don't speak for anybody else, but me personally, whenever I can be around my people, I need to be around my people. Because it's a recharge, it's a refill of being within that presence. And it's a beautiful thing. So that could have been an excuse for me to get out of character, but I didn't. But lo and behold, walking around Sam's Club, just thinking about different things, kind of low-key, people watching, seeing how people's faces are, kind of just because it was like on the radar, not weird like that. But I was thinking like, okay, this person's upset, this and that. Just going through, just meditating on different things. 2 hours go by, I get a phone call. "Hey, we messed up." I was like, "What do you mean you messed up?" It's like, "The tire that we said we had, we no longer have any in stock. The system doesn't update within 24 hours. So we didn't know." And I'm looking at the guy as he's talking to me on the phone, like in the distance. I'm like, "Okay, I see you. I'm gonna come over there in person." I walked over there, got up to him, and I could tell you the demeanor. You could tell he was a good employee, very polite, very eager to help you. And so that naturally makes you want to reflect, like, it's going to be fine. It's fine. It's not even a big deal. But then you go, man, look, be honest with you, that would have been nice to know 2 hours ago. I said, we got to have a tire. He said, I don't know what to tell you, but all that empty rack right there, that's where the tires are, but I'm sorry. I'm really sorry about that. I was like, there's got to be a cheaper tire. So we negotiated. We talked face to face. And what was awesome was somebody else came out along. These two guys are by themselves. They got people constantly, nonstop. We all know how Sam's Clubs get. It could be overwhelming. But patiently and calmly just speaking with them, trying to figure out a solution, he said, we got this tire a little bit more expensive. I was like, let's get it. So pay the extra money. I'm like, all right, now we got momentum. And he's like, but we do have that tire over there that's a little bit cheaper. I'm like, all right, well, let's go with that one since it's under warranty. Then I get a free tire. That would work out perfectly. He's like, yeah, that would. I was like, wait, I already charged my card. There was a certain limit. So I was just like, I don't know what to do now. So sparing the details, that turned into an extra couple more hours. Then by the time it was coming to the finish and they had to do the paperwork, literally tells me, I'm not sure how to do the final steps. Our manager's not here. I was like, oh, I guess I'm stuck at Sam's Club. But lo and behold, another guy comes walking in, got the manager on the phone, walking through the steps. Then all of a sudden, this lady comes stomping through in regular clothes. And she goes, y'all don't know how to do this stuff yet? I said, how you gonna get your manager to come off of a 7-day stay-at-home vacation just to come help you out with a tire? I said, ma'am, if they did that for me, I appreciate it. I'm thankful you're here. I said, the manager's gonna make everything go a lot smoother. The manager's got all the information. And she was like, that's right. She's like, y'all have to learn this so whenever I'm not here, you're able to manage it yourselves. And I was sitting there thinking, I was like, man, isn't this the whole point? This has been being passed down for thousands of years for us to be taught how to manage our own lives. It was like I said last service, we ain't going to be calling up pastor for every little detail, especially whenever we're before the Father. You know, I mean, I don't know how you would feel, pastor, if I caught like four flats at the same time in a garbage truck and I called you up and started telling me, hey pastor, I got four flats on my truck. What you got for me? What you got? But knowing our pastor, he would find a way to help. But I thought I would drop that there because I was just wondering why in the world go to Numbers 11 about complaining, about this, about that. Because constantly the natural man wants to rise up and take over the situation. We could have situations like Sam's Club. We could have little minor setbacks. The minute we start grumbling and complaining about whatever it is that we're currently going through, we're more than likely about to miss a blessing. Because I could have just like caught a whole attitude. I could have gave him the ugly look. I could have been this way, that way, and just shut that door of opportunity completely closed on my face because I didn't have the right character on. So I guess we're going to spend a little bit of time reflecting on a passage that starts off, the people complain. And it says, and it came to be when the people were as complainers. It was evil in the ears of Jehovah. And Jehovah heard it, and his displeasure burned. And the fire of Jehovah burned among them and consumed those in the outskirts of the camp. And the people cried out to Moshe, and Moshe prayed to Jehovah, and the fire died down. Then he called the name of the place Taberah, because of the fire of Jehovah had burned among them. And the mixed multitude who were in their midst lusted greatly. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, who is giving us meat to eat? We remember the fish we ate without cost in midstream, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. And I'm going to just say real quick, the reason I chuckled, who is going to give us the meat to eat? It's because Brother Scott literally just sent us a message right before Tara is talking about, I got the styrofoam cups and the spoons and the forks. Who's bringing the meat? Yeah. Who's giving us the meat? Well, yes, indeed. All right, let's move. Verse 6. But now our being is dried up. There is naught to look at but this manna. Uh-oh. Now the manna was like coriander seed, and its appearance like the appearance of bdellium. The people went about and gathered it, ground it on millstones, or beat it in the mortar, and cooked it in a pot, and made cakes of it. And its taste was the taste of cakes baked with the oil. You know how this stuff is good? Is good. The reason I'm chuckling is because I'm being reminded of what cakes says, and I'm clicking on it right now. But if you ever want to know why the manna is good for us, it's because of what it could produce in our life. And if you love cake, it'll make you go, ooga, ooga. Because guess what? That's cakes in Hebrew. H5692. Ooga. So you gotta love it. Oh Lord. That one just came back to memory. Oh mercy. And when the dew fell on the camp at night, the manna fell on it. And Moshe heard the people weeping throughout their clans, each man at the door of his tent. And the displeasure of Jehovah burned exceedingly. And in the eyes of Moshe, it was evil. So Moshe said to Jehovah, why have you done evil to your servant? And why have I not found favor in your eyes to put the burden of all these people on me? Was it I who conceived all these people? Was it I who brought them forth that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom and foster as the foster father carries a nursing child to the land which you swore to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give all these people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat to eat. I am unable to bear all these people alone, because the burden is too heavy for me. And if you're doing this to me, kill me. Please kill me. If I found favor in your eyes, and let me not see my evil. I mean, it's like you develop a sense of wanting to sympathize. Because you're like, well, if I was Moshe and I was in charge of 3 million people, and then the majority of them is starting to chant, we want meat, we want meat, bring us back, no more ooga, no more ooga. And then literally it brings Moshe to a point of level and stress to where he ends up saying something that comes from that emotion. That's something that we were just recently speaking about. America is full of emotional people. The Western culture is very emotional. And it's almost like we've been programmed to do it. So I remember growing up with MTV, VH1, BH, this BET, this and that. And everything on there was either Jerry Springer or Lord only knows what else, the drama series. And then it becomes something that we become complacent with. And then we're just okay with complaining. We're just okay with, like, it's just like a normal thing. And you know what they say, misery loves company. And we definitely don't want to be within that company. And also, if it's any motivation whatsoever at all, this kind of like made me just reflect on the fact that as people under leadership, we should do everything in our will to make sure that we're not bringing any type of reproach against leadership to cause them to feel that way. Because it's a unit effort. We should bear one another's burdens. But this is going to be an improvement in management. Then Jehovah said to Moshe, gather to me 70 men of elders of Israel, whom you know to be elders of the people and officers over them, and bring them to the tent of appointment and let them stand there with you. And I shall come down and speak with you there, and shall take of the spirit that is on you and put on them. And they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you do not bear it yourself alone. And say to the people, set yourselves apart for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat, because you have wept in the hearing of Jehovah, saying, who is giving us meat to eat? For it is well with us in Mishraim. And Jehovah shall give you meat, and you shall eat. You are going to eat, not one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, before a new moon of days, a month, until it comes out of your nostrils, and it becomes an abomination to you, because you have rejected Jehovah who is among you, and have wept before him, saying, why did we come up out of Mishraim? I don't know, every time I ever get led back to that, this passage in general, oh, that part is just so simple in the fact that we got to be careful what we ask for and make sure that whatever it is that's in our heart is not lusting after something that's going to cause us to not be able to breathe right. And Moshe said, the people in whose midst I am are 600,000 men on foot, and you have said, I give them meat to eat for a new moon of days. Could flocks and herds be slain for them to be sufficient for them? Or could all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them to be sufficient for them? And Jehovah said to Moshe, is the arm of Jehovah too short? Now see whether my word meets you or not. And it seems like to be such a strange position for especially Moshe to be brought to that, I guess we could say, level of stress, to where it's almost like as if he completely forgot all the previous things that the Father has been able to do. Got to a point where Moshe felt like he was completely bearing that burden completely on his own, to the point where he, even at the command of the Father, was going to be the one that still has to provide, even though the Father's continually the one that provides. And I think a lot of times we find ourselves in that position also, is that the fact that we go before the Father, we're asking for breakthrough and solution, and he's already got that process in place, in motion, doing it himself, but we get busy trying to figure out how to speed up the process or trying to figure out how to do it ourselves. And that's just a complete misrepresentation of who he is for us and what he's trying to do for us. We should never forget that his arm is not too short. And I know in this instance, he's going to be dishing out a whole bunch of quail in a humbling situation. And Moshe went out and spoke to the people the words of Jehovah, and he gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and placed them around the tent. And Jehovah came down in the cloud and spoke to him, and took of the spirit that was upon him, and placed the same upon the 70 elders. And it came to be, when the spirit rested upon them, that they prophesied, but did not continue. However, two men had remained in the camp. The name of one was Eldad, and the name of the other was Medad, and the spirit rested upon them. Now they were among those listed, but did not go out of the tent, and they prophesied in the camp. And a young man ran and informed Moshe and said, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. And Joshua, son of Nun, Moshe's assistant from his youth, answered and said, Moshe, my master, forbid them. It's just something about human nature that doesn't like change. But yet, what do we show up here for?
Right.
It's for change to take place, for growth to take place, for us to be together and thank the Father for incredible healing and breakthrough. That's not only just required from the administration of one individual, but could be literally spoken by the individual. Just as it was continually said that I've been thinking about all week, you say to this mountain, be moved and cast it into the sea, it will be done. And then, of course, I'm reminded time and time again, whenever he did provide the healing and the miracles, he always reminded them in that moment, it was your belief that has made you whole. That's why our mindset and what our faith is towards whenever it comes to the Father is so important. It's so important. So let's get to the quail. And a wind went forth and from Jehovah, and it brought quail from the sea and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side and about a day's journey on the other side, all around the camp, and about 2 cubits above the surface of the ground. And the people were up all that day and all that night and all the next day and gathered quail, he who had least gathered 10 omers. And they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. The meat was still between their teeth before it was chewed, and the wrath of Jehovah burned against the people. And Jehovah struck the people with an exceeding great plague. Then he called the name of that place Kiriboth Hattaavah, because they buried the people who had lusted. From Kiriboth Hattaavah, the people set for Hazeroth, and they were at Hazeroth. But let's go back to our Exodus 33. Right. I think that's pretty neat and interesting to think about and to be mindful of, because if we're not able to put ourselves in that position to where we receive the ood and make sure that we're doing what it is that is required of us, then we're going to be faced with problems instead of faced with solutions. I believe we were on verse 4. And when the people heard this evil word, they mourned, and no one put on his ornaments. And Jehovah said, Amar, to Moshe, say to the children of Israel, you are stiff-necked people. Should I go up in your midst for one moment, I shall consume you. And now, take off your ornaments, and I shall know what to do to you. So the children of Israel took off their ornaments at Mount Horeb. And Moshe took his tent and pitched it outside the camp, far from the camp, and called it the tent of appointment. And it came to be, everyone who sought Jehovah went out of the tent of appointment, was outside the camp. And it came to be, whenever Moshe went out to the camp, to the tent, that all the people rose and each man stood at the tent of his door and watched Moshe until he entered the tent. And as I'm going through this, of course I pray. The Father remind me of what it is that I'm going throughout the week. But as I was first going through this section, reviewing it, it was a reminder that the fact is the Father wants personal one-on-one relationship with us. It's not through association. It's not through someone that might seem more equipped for you to be able to have that relationship. Now, of course, we have that intercessor that allows the relationship to even be a potential in the first place. But it was a humbling reminder, just like in the garden, they ran and they hid their faces in shame. Children of Israel, whenever it came to Mount Horeb and the assembly, and they said, no, it's all right, speak to Moshe. We'll listen to him. The Father said, okay. But time and time and time again throughout the history, it's been the Father trying to build direct relationship with us as individuals to build us up, so that way we can have that means of access. Because, Imagine coming to the congregation and you kind of like, you don't know how to really approach, so you kind of just peeking your head around the corner, watching pastor go up into the office and just think, okay, I wonder what he's got for me. He's going to come back something for you, for each and every one of us. But you could also have whatever it is that you're seeking if you seek him throughout the week too. This is ultimately what's being said here, because they were watching Moshe go into the tent of appointment that was set outside the camp, and they were what? They were by their doors, watching, waiting, watching until that cloud shows up like it's about to speak about, and then their posture changed. And it came to be, when Moshe entered the tent, that the column of cloud descended and stood at the door of the tent, and he spoke with Moshe. And all the people saw the column of cloud standing at the tent door. And all the people rose and bowed themselves, each one at the door of his tent. Thus Jehovah spoke to Moshe face to face, as a man speaks to his friend. And he would return to the camp, but his servant Yehoshua, son of Nun, a young man, did not leave the tent. And Moshe said to Jehovah, "See, you are saying to me, 'Bring up this people,' but you have not made known to me whom you were sent with me. Though you have said, 'I know you by name,' and you have also found favor in my eyes. And now, please, if I found favor in your eyes, please show me your way and let me know you, so that I find favor in your eyes. And consider that this nation is your people." And he said, "My presence, Panaim, does go, and I shall give you rest." And he said to him, "If your presence is not going, do not lead us up from here. For how then shall it be known that I have found favor in your eyes, I and your people, except you go with us? Then we shall be distinguished, I and your people, from the people who are upon the face of the earth." And Jehovah said to Moshe, "Even this word you have spoken, I shall do. For you have found favor in my eyes, I know you by name." Then he said, "Please show me your esteem." And he said, "I shall cause my goodness to pass before you, and I shall proclaim the name of Jehovah before you. And I shall favor him whom I favor, and I shall have compassion on him who I have compassion." But he said, "You are unable to see my face, for no man does see me and live." And Jehovah said, "See, there is a place with me, and you shall stand on the rock. And it shall be when my esteem passes by, I shall put you in a cleft of the rock, cover you with my hand while I pass by. Then I shall take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen." So, of course, we know that going into chapter 34, it deals with whenever he's ascending and descending. He's spending more closer time with the Father on the behalf of the people, and then his face begins to shine. It radiates. There's this actual physical thing taking place in a supernatural way that literally radiates the very essence, the presence, the face-to-face interaction with Moshe. And it should be a constant reminder of us that as we go throughout the day, the way, as me and my wife's been praying this week, that it's never just us trying to go through routine. Because time and time again, we can go through routine and put on a face when we come here. Then we put on another face when we go there. And then we put on another face here. We don't need all that. You starting to put on more faces? There's a word in Greek that means that. And the English word is hypocrite. The Greek word is hypocrites, which is not in the notes. It's just something I will never forget, because it's the very first Greek word that I ever learned. And it was also the very first word that caused a lot of conviction in my heart whenever I began this walk, because I was always just trying to go by and pretend like I'm fine, just always putting on a face for people. And I think we can go an entire lifetime of service to the Father and get used to doing that. And what happens is sometimes the face, you recognize the mask more than who you really are in the Father. And that could be a scary position to be in. We don't ever want to be in that. I mean, we know in Jacob, in the book of James, in chapter 1, it says the double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. He looks in the mirror and he goes about his business and forgets what he looks like. You know, for the long, I remember the first time I ever read that, I was like, oh, he must have short-term memory. No, he's got a bad case of hypocrisy. And, we don't ever want to be in that position. We should always want to put on the face that the Father has given us. So with that being said, the Greek equivalent for face, for panayim, is G4383. And that's prosopon. And as the front, as being towards view, that is the countenance, aspect, appearance, surface, implication, and presence, and person, appearance. And it continues forward. It continues on. But it's all reflective of the same essence of what panim is. Because we know that there's literal and figurative whenever it's dealing with face. We could be facing a direction or our little literal face. Or we could be dealing with presence or the face of an object. Of course, when I was reading through this, I was reminded of Matthew 17, 1 through 13. And that's one of the places that it is mentioned. But this is the transfiguration, something that we're all very familiar with. And it's like I said at the beginning of the service, a lot of this is probably going to be review. A lot of you probably already knew that the gematria was 180, dealing with a literal turning. But the good thing is, if it is review, then that means you've been paying attention and you're taking notes and actually absorbing it. So that's the best way I learn, is hearing the same thing. But now dealing with our master in a similar fashion, it says, and after 6 days, Yeshua took Kepha and Jacob and Yochanan, his brother, and brought them on a high mountain by themselves. And he was transformed before them. And his face, prospono, or prospon, shone like the sun. And his garments became as white as the light. And see, Moshe and Eliyahu appeared to them, talking with them. And Kepha answering said to Yeshua, Master, is it good for us to be here? If you wish, let us make here 3 booths, one for you, one for Moshe, and one for Eliyahu. Well, then the owner speaks. When we talk about the manager, there's something special that happens whenever the owner speaks. Now, I don't know who the owner of Sam's is, but I have a feeling that it's not just one person. While he was still speaking, see, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And see, a voice came out of the cloud saying, This is my son, the beloved, in whom I did delight. Hear him. And when the taught ones heard, they fell on their faces and were much afraid. I guarantee you, I'm going to say if, when, and then, because it's very possible. I'm believing for it. We ever get grace with an experience like that? I don't care how many layers of concrete's underneath that carpet. I'm hitting the floor. That's our proper response whenever it comes to when you hear the owner and the manager's voice. And when the taught ones heard, they fell on their faces and were much afraid. But Yeshua came near and touched them and said, Rise and do not be afraid. I have lifted their eyes, and they saw no one but Yeshua only. And as they were coming down from the mountain, Yeshua commanded them, saying, Do not mention the vision to anyone until the Son of Adam is raised from the dead. And his taught ones asked him, saying, Why then do the scribes say Eliyahu has to come first? And Yeshua answering said to them, Eliyahu is indeed coming first and shall restore. But I say to you, Eliyahu has already come. And they did not recognize him, but they did to him whatever they wished. And the way, and this way, the Son of Adam is also about to suffer by them. Then the taught ones understood that he had spoken to them about Yohanan, the immerser. So we see a lot of different parallels and similarities in fashion throughout Scripture. The obvious plug-ins of the Torah and the prophets. And then we see that bravery exudes. In the same sense, Yehuda, raising up to the occasion in our Torah portion, putting everything on the line, because we know that he's literally telling his father, if I don't come back with Benjamin, consider me dead. Everything, none of it, all of it, gone. Putting everything on the line. And that's reminiscent of the Ud, Stephanos, the warning. It's all interesting how when you look at the entire picture and how it kind of like molds together, how literally within the same proximity of Scripture, there's that same story being built up in similar fashion with the disciples. So the final reading of the text tonight is going to be in Acts chapter 5. And that is going to be a prime example of why it's important for us not to fake face, because there could be consequences that come from it. And to make sure that we're emboldened to be able to be the ones also, when the time comes, to give heed, to give ud, no matter what kind of persecution comes our way. Because to be completely honest with you, we don't know. We don't know. Literally, at the drop of a hat, things could change. We know what the word says, that whenever certain tribulation comes upon the face of the earth, that men's hearts shall fail them. That is a very, very big ood. That's a very big warning. But then you got to ask the question, why would it fail them? Because there was no face-to-face time with the Most High. It doesn't matter about your bank account. It doesn't matter about your status. It doesn't matter how much beans, ammo, so on and so forth. That whenever certain things are set in motion, take place, and then it happens, you're going to find out if you're going to be walking in the same spirit as the examples that were given continuously. But let's go ahead and look at this Acts account. I was originally going to skip verses 1 through 11, but then when I went reread it, it reminded me of the consequences of faking face. We're dealing with Ananias and Sapphira, or Hananiah and Sapphira. But a certain man named Hananiah and Sapphira, his wife, sold a possession, and he kept back from the price, his wife also being aware of it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the feet of the emissaries. But Kepha said, Hananiah, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the set-apart spirit and keep back from the price of the land for yourself? While it remained, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not in your authority? Why have you conceived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to Elohim. Then Hananiah, hearing these words, fell down and breathed his last. And greater fear came upon all those who heard of this. But the young man arose and wrapped him up, carried him out and buried him. And it came to be about 3 hours later that his wife came in, not knowing what had taken place. Kepha responded to her, say to me whether you sold the land for so much. She said, yes, for so much. So Kepha said to her, why have you agreed to try the set-apart spirit of Jehovah? Look, the feet of those who buried your husband are at the door, and they shall carry you out. And immediately she fell down at his feet and breathed her last, and the young men came in and found her dead. And carrying her out, they buried her beside her husband. And great fear came upon all the assembly and upon all who heard this. And of course, that's just something that I was reminded of, how important it is for us not to fake faith. Because that's part of the fact that whenever things begin to unravel itself and expose what it is that you're really doing, and you're not in that right protective position, your fate could be in the same way. That's something to be mindful of. Verse 12, and through the hands of the emissaries, many signs and wonders were done among the people, and they were all with two minds in Shlomo's porch. One mind. That should be fresh, right? That should be real fresh for us. One mind. One mind. I could see some faces that are just like, yeah. I mean, real subtle, Rob. Real subtle, Brother Rob. Yeah, I tried. But with one mind, all connected together. And yes, Pastor, that's a Greek word. That G3661 that we were given. Ham uth umadon, I think. Of that sort. But unanimously, with one accord, with one mind. And for me personally, I 100% received that whenever it came to Shavuot. Because the reality is, not so much for whenever, I'm going to say it like this, whenever we decide to prioritize certain things that maybe could have been reprioritized whenever it comes to certain things dealing with the Father, that we consider greatly on what it is, what it means to the Father whenever we decide to do those certain things. But not so much also being absent literally in person, but sometimes we can be guilty of being absent in person. Because what we were just previously reading in the other areas, that was a complete unit of people together. One accord, but not of one mind. You know there was those groups that absolutely love the manna. They want manna. All the time. But then, of course, there were those that were too reminiscent on what they used to have. We freely received that meat, the garlic, the onions, the cucumbers, so on and so forth. Them peaches. Peaches are good. Them peaches are real good. But the reality is, we should never be reminiscent on the things of the past, thinking that we were free in that. Because the reality was, there were slaves in that. Just like us. We were slaves in whatever it is that we thought we were so freely running about to do. I'll freely say this. There's times where, yes, things get busy. And then you consider the responsibilities. You weigh out and measure continually. It's just what we do. We prioritize. We think about certain things. And then when we get caught up, the enemy's going to try and whisper and say, oh man, you remember how much easier it was whenever it is? Okay, well here's a grocery list of all the problems that I had that came with that lifestyle. I don't need that no more. And that should motivate us to be in one place together, but also of one mind. So that way we can actually see the things of the Father and His glory manifest mightily from us. So I mean, and here it's going to mention about people being so excited that Peter was coming through town, that he's literally going to have people putting themselves out there just to get a pass-by of his shadow touching them to receive healing. That's some radiation. That's radioactive. I was thinking about that the whole time, ever since Pastor brought it up, about the glory being compared to getting a sunburn. That is second-degree burns. My wife's looking at me, waking up every hour on the diet at night, tossing and turning. You don't forget it. I'd rather get the spiritual burns from the Father, because the flesh can't handle the heat. I'm thankful for y'all keeping y'all faces intact. Let's keep moving. But of the rest, no one had the courage to join them. However, the people made much of them. And more believers were added to the master, large numbers, both of men and women. So that they brought the sick out into the streets and laid them on beds and couches, that at least the shadow of Kepha, passing by, might fall on some of them. A large number also gathered from the surrounding cities to Jerusalem, bringing sick ones and those who were troubled by unclean spirits. And they were all healed. But the high priest rose up, and all those with him, which is the sect of Sadducees, and they were filled with jealousy, and seized the emissaries and put them in public jail. But a messenger of Jehovah opened the prison doors at night and brought them out and said, "Go and stand in a set-apart place and speak to the people all the words of this life." Now when they heard, they went into the set-apart place early in the morning and were teaching. But the high priest and those with him came and called the council together with all the elders of the children of Israel and sent to the prison for them to be brought. But having come, the officers did not find in the prison, and they went back and reported it, saying, "We found the prison shut in all safety, and the watchers standing outside before the doors, but having opened them, we found no one inside." And as the high priest and the captain of the set-apart place and the chief priests and these heard these words, they were puzzled and wondered what this might be. But one came and reported to them, saying, "Look, the men whom you put in prison are standing in the set-apart place and teaching the people." Then the captain went with the officers and brought them, not with force, for they feared the people, lest they should be stoned. And having brought them, they set before them the council, and the high priest asked them, saying, "Did we not strictly command you not to teach in this name? And look, you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching, and intend to bring the blood of this man upon us." And Kepha said, when Kepha and the others' emissaries answering said, "We have to obey Elohim rather than men." Something to reflect upon about that. Are we going to be in that position whenever that time comes? I don't know. I'm speaking it as like it may happen soon, but let's be honest. We weren't given an exact date, but we're told to look at the times and the signs and the things that are happening. There's something to be considerable about, to think about. The Elohim of our fathers raised up Yeshua, whom you laid hands on, hanging him on a timber. Him, a prince and a savior, Elohim has exalted to his right hand, to give repentance to Israel and forgiveness of sins. And we are his witnesses to these matters, and so also the set-apart spirit whom Elohim has given to those who obey him. I mean, that kind of speaks volumes of itself, doesn't it? He gives to those who obey him. So, I mean, that says a lot without saying much, but if you were to say much, then that means that we have to be wise and discerning and test all things whenever it comes to moments that people may proclaim or prophesy or say they had a dream given. Are they living up to that requirement of obedience, that authority that's given through that? And those hearing were cut to the heart and took counsel to kill them. But a certain one in the council stood up, a Pharisee named Gamaliel, and a teacher of the Torah, respected by all the people, and ordered them to put the emissaries outside for a little while, and said to them, "Men of Israel, take heed to yourselves what you intend to do to these men. I could tell you what, Shaul had the top of the line best teacher you could possibly have in that time frame. Because the amount of wisdom that comes from this, this reflection of someone that's a part of their group that still realize the in-depthness and the seriousness of the situation, that, as we're going to read, literally, what is it to people to persecute someone? Because if it's not of Elohim, if it's not of God, then it will not succeed. There's been many of false messiahs that have risen up and started movements. I mean, there's plenty now too. Some of the craziest things you'll see whenever you spend enough time on YouTube looking at what's going on. But it goes to show nothing can stand a flame to Yeshua, because he's the true Messiah. When he said to them, "Men of Israel, take heed to yourselves what you intend to do to these men. For before these days, Todah rose up, claiming to be somebody. A number of men, about 400, did join him. He was slain, and all who obeyed him were dispersed and came to naught. After him, Yehuda of Galil rose up in the days of the census and drew away many people after him. He also perished, and all who obeyed him were scattered. And now I say to you, stay away from these men and leave them alone. Because if this plan or this work is of men, it shall be overthrown. But if it's of Elohim, you are unable to overthrow it, lest you even be found to fight against Elohim." And they heeded his advice, and having called for the emissaries, beating them, they commanded that they should not speak in the name of Yeshua and let them go. There's some things that we get pretty good at not wanting to hear, but whenever it comes to a situation like that, use it all day long. Plug them bad boys up, because we don't have to obey the oppressor. Then indeed they were rejoicing from the presence, prospon, of the council, because they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. And daily, in the set-apart place, in every house, they did not cease teaching and bringing the good news, Yeshua the Messiah. Amen. And, you know, what I really, really enjoyed about going through this area, this small sliver of the word panim, a face, is barely a speck compared to all of how it branches out, is how step and step in line, the next chapter is Acts chapter 6, Acts chapter 7. Deals directly with Stephanos being raised up, showing himself approved mightily to the point where his face became like likened onto a messenger of Elohim to the crowd that he was speaking to, the libertines, you know, those so highly exalted of themselves. That it's continual, it's reflective, and it almost feels like, thankfully, it's never ending, the amount of parallels that you can draw continuously to his word. But for us to realize the goodness of the Father, that if we allow ourselves to be put in the foundation, just like Moshe was put in the foundation of the cleft of the rock, specifically put the word foundation there for a purpose, because there's a foundation that he wants to establish us on. So that way we can see that goodness. That way we can radiate in the way that the Father has planned for us so greatly and continue to do what it is that he called us to do. And that's to spread that good news to the lost and the brokenhearted. But with that being said, I love each and every one of y'all. Y'all have beautifully amazing faces, and Shabbat Shalom.